draws for Euro 2016 and the Champions League knockout rounds have been made. Chelsea get PSG again, but Fabregas says that Chelsea's players need to play for their pay as they stumble again on Monday Night Football this week. All this and more coming your way here on the 20-minute hit. I'm Ollie Wilson, sports commentator and broadcaster for BT Sport, TalkSport and various outlets around the world. Joining me, as always, and back on the show once again as we go through five topics, 3 minutes on each, as always, is Mr. Paul McDonald back in the Northern Hemisphere. Paul, mate, how are you doing? Pleasure to have you back this side of the globe.
Not too bad. 39 degrees, colder than I was this time last week, mate.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a bit of a shock to the system coming back to British winter. What's caught your eye this week before we dive into the talking points for today, mate?
A week of draws, I guess. CL draw, European Championship draw, see how those play out, and obviously other topics like, in particular, the wages in football and where they might be headed in the next few years.
Yeah, we'll be diving into all of that on the show today. And joining us on the show is Goal.com's French football expert, a fine journalist in across the board, basically, in all sports. But Mr. Robin Berner joining us here on the show. Robin, a pleasure to have you on the show today, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, really well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. Mate, debut, so hoping to make an impression.
Mate, no nerves, it's fine, and I'm sure you'll get a second call-up if all goes well. Let's dive straight into the first topic of conversation, and of course, Euro 2016, the draw made on Saturday. Robin, I want to dive straight into the French point of view for this draw, because the French have been given a very easy draw in Group A, of course, automatically qualifying as hosts.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll really fancy their chances, not just in Group A, but, you know, in the tournament as a whole. It gives them a really solid platform to work from. They're obviously heavy favourites to win their first three games, or at least qualify in top position. And, you know, I think that's going to be a really solid base for them to work from. They've obviously played these teams quite recently, particularly Switzerland. They beat in the World Cup 5-2 and looked devastating there. Obviously, the knockout stages didn't go quite as they'd wanted, but, you know, certainly they'll take a lot of confidence from that. They have been beaten by Albania, so that'll be a bit of a worry for Didier Deschamps, but at the same time, it would mean that the squad know that they have to be sharp and they really can't take anything for granted.
I don't think we can worry too much, though, about any of these big sides because of the format that we've got. I mean, it's great we've got a group of death like Belgium, Italy, Ireland, Sweden, for instance, England, Russia, Wales, Slovakia is going to be quite different, I think, for Roy Hodgson as well. But I think across the board, all of these top pot sides are going to end up going through because you're going to have potentially three teams from some of these groups going through into the knockout stages.
Yeah.
Yes. It's unfortunate the way that the Platinis did this. I mean, let's not beat about the bush. The reason why the tournament has been expanded is to make sure that Platini secures more votes in elections. Obviously, those days have been and gone, and we're in a very different era in terms of Platini and UEFA. But that was the reason behind the expansion of the tournament, was to give more teams an opportunity to actually get to the tournament, and therefore give him more votes when the elections come around. It's pretty transparent, and unfortunately, it leads to a lot of meaningless games at the early stages of this competition.
Is that important then, that we've got, you know, this almost duff group, if you will, of Portugal, Iceland, Hungary and Austria, and it's actually at least left us with some tasty ties elsewhere, and when you look at Germany, Ukraine, Poland, Northern Ireland as well? I mean, that's a very interesting group, almost politically as well as footballing, in football context as well. But we do still have key matchups in these games to keep people's attention throughout a almost meaningless group stage.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we do, though. I mean, as you say, everybody knows who's going to qualify. If they lose a game, they've still got a very strong chance of qualifying just by winning one of the last two games. I mean, I'm with Paul on this one. I think it's going to take away so much from the competition. The Euros used to be a really competitive competition from the very start. The teams had to be at their best because the quality of the 16 teams was so high. Now we've got 24 teams. I just think so much of the excitement is going to be taken away, particularly from the early stages of the competition. I think it's really going to suffer for it.
Just quickly, gents, as we're running out of time here, England, their group, Russia, Wales, Slovakia. Is Hodgson going to be pleased? I know Chris Coleman didn't want England, for instance, for Wales.
Yeah, I think he'll be happy with that group. I think that the Russia team, at the moment, there's nothing to fear from that lineup. They don't really have a standout player. Obviously, Gareth Bale might cause them problems, but at the end of the day, we only need potentially 4 points to qualify, so it's not a massive problem for them.
England, given what many predict, a very cushy draw. And I apologise, gentlemen, of course, two Scottish people talking about the Euros, it's got to be pretty tough indeed. So let's move away from the Euros next summer and move on to the Champions League knockout draw. Sticking with football, of course. Arsenal get Barca, Real Madrid take on Roma, Ghent and Wolfsburg draw each other early on in the draw. Gentlemen, everybody must have been so frustrated to see Ghent and Wolfsburg coming out against each other, because those are the two teams that everybody was eyeing as thinking we'll take one of those.
I'm going to speak from a personal point of view here and say that I'm quite pleased that they got drawn against each other, simply because it will give something a little bit different in the quarterfinals. I don't think Ghent are as bad a team as they're perhaps being portrayed as. They looked quite competitive in the group stages. They looked energetic, fit. Looked like they were going to be really up for every single game. So I think they're going to be a much harder test for some teams than perhaps would be anticipated. Certainly the likes of Barcelona and Bayern, maybe Paris Saint-Germain would wipe the floor with them, but I think anybody else would really be given a test by them.
Well, I can see why you say Ghent are perhaps being considered very much underdogs for this, but at the same time, you look at the quality draws that it's now given us, the fact that Ghent and Wolfsburg get to play each other. Arsenal-Barca, it's always going to be tough for Arsenal. I imagine they'll get a fantastic result at home and then blow it all away in the Nou Camp as well. What about Juve-Bayern Munich, though? This is one of the ones that's really stood out for me, because Juve had that awful start to the season. Bayern have been so strong throughout this season already, but Juve are starting to come back into this into their stride, if you will, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Juve had that obviously a horrendous start, but they've really started to find their feet in recent weeks. I thought they were really good in the second half against Fiorentina at the weekend in the 3-1-1. They're very much back in the Serie A title race. But I just, even though they got to the final last season, I think that Barcelona and Bayern Munich are more than one level above every other team in the competition this season, and that includes Real Madrid. And I think every neutral at the moment would like to see a Barcelona versus Bayern final, because I think they would concur that these are the two greatest teams in the world at the moment, and they'd like to see them face off. But just on a wider point to the draw, it's boring, Ollie. It's a boring draw, and it's because of the restrictions that UEFA puts upon itself when it has the draw. Now, some of them are obvious, like if you played in the same group, you can't then beat in the last 16, and that's fair enough. But the country stipulation that's put in the last 16 stage, to me, is archaic and absolutely pointless. And it leads to the same teams drawing each other all the time, because there's so many restrictions on who you actually can get that inevitably Arsenal end up playing Barcelona by quirks of the system. And I think they really need to look at that for next year if they want to kind of refresh the competition, because I completely agree with Robin. Ghent versus Wolfsburg might on paper be boring to people, but at least it's a fresh game.
Yeah, but the only reason that is because it's TV money. It's all going to come down to TV money. Unfortunately, as we will be talking about money later on in the show, it's always going to be about how much money they can make of this. And by separating the English clubs, for instance, it means that they can have potentially two nights of football in the UK being broadcast on television. And that they're never going to change that, Paul. That's just something that's not going to happen. It's a shame that football and sport in general is going down this route, and has been going down this route for the last 15 years or so since the Champions League was created in this way. But it's something that we're not going to be able to get rid of easily.
But equally, I believe that UEFA paired the Arsenal and Barcelona games and Juventus and Bayern games on the same night, which seems mental, because those are the two marquee games.
It is always going to come down to how much TV revenue they can make, gentlemen. Unfortunately, it's a sorry world that we live in these days with sport. Talking of funny money, talking of money in sport, Cesc Fabregas has come out this week after the loss on Monday night for Chelsea in the Premier League, and has said that Chelsea players need to stand up and start earning their big paychecks. Gentlemen, sports athletes get paid so much these days anyway. Should we be saying this across the board in the world of sport? I mean, you look at some of the money that's coming out of the MLB at the moment, Paul. I know you want to touch on this recently. And just in general, the Nike LeBron lifetime deal as well. Athletes are getting paid far too much for what is just playing games.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw a headline this week regarding MLB contracts. I know that the pitcher, Zach Greinke, went for something in the region of $275 million over the space of 6 or 7 years in his most recent contract. And there's a firm belief that we might actually hit the $500 million barrier in this trade window for an MLB talent. Now, even though that the lengths of the contracts in MLB are longer than football in a lot of cases, that is an astonishing amount of money for what is essentially a game of rounders, let's face it. not to disparage the MLB fans out there, that's what they're paying for. That kind of money is obscene. And when you look at the cash like that, you would say that the likes of Messi and Ronaldo are perhaps underpaid in comparison, and also probably in comparison to their NFL counterparts and quarterback positions. So you just wonder if there's ever going to be a glass ceiling here where people say, okay, enough is enough. That's not actually worth the money that I'm going to pay you.
But surely the reason why MLB players get paid so much is because they play in the US at a time when there's no other sport available. So all of the sports headlines, all the television and the sport that's been broadcast on TV live is going to be, aside from, you know, the you say European Championships next summer, for instance, is going to be baseball at that point. So in that respect, these MLB players are worth every penny, because if you can get the majority of the sports fans in the nation watching, say, the San Francisco Giants or the Arizona Diamondbacks by bringing in somebody like Zach Greinke, then you're worth your weight in gold to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's economics that dictates this. It's basic supply and demand. If these guys can demand these wages, and of course, then they're going to get paid, as you say. And I think as long as television revenues keep rising, then these guys are just going to get paid more and more. And that doesn't just count for MLB, that counts for English Premier League football, any sport in the world, basically. And it does seem obscene, but, you know, that's basically just a product of the capitalist environment that we're living in at the moment.
I mean, Robin, you've followed PSG a lot, and obviously the transformation that they've had with the influx of money and financial spending and power that they've got now as a football team. Do you think these players that PSG are paying shed loads of money for have been worth the value in terms of the worldwide media attention that they've drawn? Because it's not just about winning trophies. Trophies is a small part of it. You think Barca get 188 million perhaps with their next Qatar Airways deal just to be on the front of that shirt because of the players that are wearing that shirt. Has it been value for money for PSG to invest this?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at somebody like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who is the absolute figurehead of Paris Saint-Germain at the moment, he's their, you know, their key man. He drives so much of their marketing. For him to get paid €250,000 a week or however much he's on is definitely worth it for PSG, because not only do they reap the rewards on the field, they also get the exposure that he drives off the field too. So for a guy like him, it's absolutely worthwhile for PSG to be paying so much money. And it's not my personal opinion that it's worth it, but, you know, economics everything.
I don't think you can ever say that any of these guys are actually worth the amount of money that they get paid for, as you say, just playing games that we'd all play happily in the park on a Friday night if we had the facilities here in the UK. Let's move away from football and get into a bit of boxing and UFC. Conor McGregor, excuse me, taking 13 seconds to beat Jose Aldo in one of the biggest fights of the year in UFC. How is that competition that UFC has suddenly brought to boxing in terms of fighting sports affected the world of boxing? Because here's this brand new, brash, loudmouth, not just McGregor, but UFC as a product, that's starting to take the headlines away from boxing as that sport dumbs down and becomes really quite boring and bland, especially in the heavyweight division.
It's not just taken away from the heavyweight boxing division, in my opinion. It's taken away from WWE. And it's a very serious point, because Dana White is a massive fan of Vince McMahon and a massive fan of WWE in general, and their product and their business plan. And a lot of the ideas that he's watched develop over WWE in the years recently, he's taken across into UFC and made it legitimate. Like, everything from the way that the athletes pose towards the camera with the belt across their neck is quintessential wrestling entertainment. So what he's done is he's taken the interesting parts of that and brought it across into UFC, and he's also bringing a significant chunk of that audience with him. You've seen a bit of crossover stuff now, like CM Punk, who used to be the WWE champion, is moving across into UFC soon and is set to fight next year. So I think there's not only that audience globally for heavyweight boxing, but domestically in the US, there's a significant chunk of WWE fans that are actually moving across to watch UFC instead. Well, and it's because of the excitement of the product that they're getting is better than anything that boxing or wrestling can offer at the moment.
The thing with boxing and UFC is that it's very similar to almost the Monday Night Wars that WWE and WCW had, in terms of WWE back then and WWF brought this new attitude era, was quite bright, loud and exciting, and that's what helped win the kind of Monday night television ratings war between those two brands. And that's what UFC is doing on a kind of larger scale to boxing, in that it's this new bright shiny product with really loud mouths but really genuine characters in it. as opposed to boxing that's trying to now replicate that in some way, shape or form. And it seems staged, and the pageantry around, as we saw with like Tyson Fury, just looks a bit awkward and frustrating in these boxing scenarios. I think that's what's the trouble is that UFC's come on. It's the bright, new, hip, trendy way of doing things. And boxing can't really react to it. I very much agree with what you're saying about the links between WWE and UFC. Robin, do you think it's a good sport for us to be kind of promoting? It's pub fighting in an octagon, basically.
Well, that's certainly true, but it's also incredibly entertaining. I mean, I would never claim to be a combat sports fanatic, but you know, UFC is just so watchable because of, like Paul said, the sort of the entertainment aspect around it. You know, you can obviously question it sort of morally, should we be watching stuff like this? But, you know, I personally find it very entertaining. I don't think I'd watch it all the time, but yeah, certainly once every 2 or 3 weeks, it's thrilling to watch because of it's such a dynamic sport. It's obviously testing more skills than boxing. You know, it's just so fast moving and so exciting.
And it's genuinely, as I say, it's got characters that you can get almost behind. And the fact that there's so many people would watch it and think, I could never do UFC, I'm not trained in that way. Whereas some people think, yeah, I could probably throw a few punches in a boxing ring, which makes what, for instance, McGregor and Rousey have done so impressive at that level as well. It's still on the rise, and I think boxing is really being shaken by what UFC is doing. Finally, gentlemen, we'll finish up today with a little bit of sports personality of the year discussion, including Tyson Fury, should his name be withdrawn from the 12-man list. Been petitions about that. And of course, Serena Williams named Sports Illustrated's Athlete of the Year as well. Paul, and I know you want to bring horse racing back into this as well, don't you?
Yeah, there's been a bit of a debate in the States about and a controversy regarding Serena Williams versus American Pharoah for the Sports Person of the Year. To me, the key is in the name, person, but there's a lot of shout for American Pharoah, and with due cause. I mean, you would say that American Pharoah has perhaps became the most famous horse of certainly the modern era because of the achievements this year, winning the Triple Crown. But let's face it, Serena Williams had a fantastic year, and she was one fluke result away from potentially winning the Grand Slam in tennis. So I think that in general, the sports persons of the year should be completely 100% to do with the achievements in their own particular sport and field, and very little, if anything, to do with the actual personality of the person, which brings me around to the Tyson Fury debate about even calling this the sports personality of the year. Because if you want to have a guy who, if you want to call it personality, and you want to have a guy like Tyson Fury involved, then you're kind of besmirching your own award by even having him associated with it, in my opinion.
Yeah, his comments, we won't get into just how outlandish his comments have been, but very offensive indeed. But the point is that they've pinned themselves into a corner with the naming of it being Sports Personality of the Year. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really come into personalities anyway. It's a popularity contest, and Tyson Fury, I don't think, was going to win many popularity contests ahead of somebody like Lewis Hamilton, Andy Murray, for instance. You know for a fact there's going to be all of the middle-class sports viewers in the world going, oh, the Davis Cup wasn't that fantastic, that was so recent as well. Hamilton might be in a bit of a struggle because he wrapped up the F1 season so comfortably with four races to go. It's going to be Andy Murray. There's no point even debating who it's going to be. I think the one about American Pharoah and Serena Williams is quite interesting, because Serena, if she won the Grand Slam, I'd be all with you saying, yes, she deserves it, it's fine. But American Pharoah, that's eight victories, one defeat this season, and the first horse in 37 years to win the Triple Crown. That's far more impressive than coming close to winning the Grand Slam, Paul.
Yeah, but it's a horse, Ollie.
Yeah, but it's so impressive, and you're talking about what it's achieved in its sport. So you've got to go. Surely you should be going with what the horse has achieved in its sport, Robin.
I think once you start giving awards like this to a horse, you're on very, very dodgy ground. I mean, I have to say, I'm fully with Paul. Horses aren't people, so therefore, if somebody's going to win Sports Person of the Year, then it has to be a person and not a horse.
Fair enough. Well, okay, let's talk about Sports Personality of the Year then. Who's going to be the winner? Is there any? I mean, like I say, it's going to be Andy Murray, surely.
Yeah, I'd love to see Murray win it. I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago on the show about the incredible achievement for Murray to win the Davis Cup with that team. They say there is no one man team in tennis anymore, but I think Murray's kind of refuted that with this incredible performance in this Davis Cup. And yeah, the fact that Murray's completed the set of winning Grand Slams, Olympic, and now Davis Cup, I think he thoroughly deserves it.
Robin, who would you have? Who do you want it to be?
Andy Murray.
Oh, yeah, I knew there's two Scots who'd say Murray. Look, I'm saying Jess Ennis. I'm sorry, but you come back after 13 months away and you win the World Championships again after becoming having another child born. That's far more impressive than Andy Murray just, you know, being good at tennis, which we know he's good at anyway. That's all we've got time for on the show today here on the 20-Minute Hit. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at 20Minute Hit. That's at 20Minute Hit, all one word. Robin, a massive thanks to you for joining us today, mate. Really appreciate your time, fella.
Pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
And Paul, as always, mate, I'll catch you next week for sure. Have a very good week. Enjoy all the sport, and we will see you in 7 days' time. Have a good one.